After a lifetime in the public eye, former First Lady Tess Carlisle retired to her Ohio home. But she did not go quietly.
What do we look like, waiters? Are we a bunch of waiters?
Just ask the Secret Service agent.
I can't do three more years of this.
Guarding Tess.
We are going to the opera in Columbus.
Mrs. Carlisle, that emergency alarm is abusive.
That alarm belongs to me, and I will use it, by God, any time I see fit.
How is she these days? What's she like?
I guess you could say she's several different personalities in one.
Well, one of her personalities called the White House last night and asked the president if he could arrange for you to stay on with him.
The president.
We are not leaving this house until you are seated properly with your seatbelt firmly fastened.
Nope.
It's the worst assignment there is.
I need a price check and Lasur baby peas.
They're on special today, 2 for $59.
Copy that, Doug, but I believe we've lost interest in peas. Repeat, lost interest in peas.
You be kind enough to get my ball.
I'm a Secret Service agent, Mrs. Carlisle. Not a caddy.
I told her. You want that ball, you go find it yourself.
Come on.
What are you, crazy?
I'd be very careful if I were you, agent.
Doug, telephone.
Please hold for the president.
How are you?
I'm fine, and you?
Well, I'm not too good. I'm having a damn Tess Carlisle problem. Maybe you and I know what a pain in the butt she is, but this woman is a national treasure.
I wouldn't tick her off. A couple of more phone calls to the White House and you'll be...
guarding my dog. You understand what I'm saying?
So.
She took off!
Tell them they're just out joyriding again. It's not a problem.
Seven well-trained, heavily armed men can't take care of one little old lady.
Damn!
You should have a martini. You should, better yet, give a tired old widow a break.
Shirley MacLaine.
With all due respect, why me?
Because I like you, Douglas.
Please hold for the president.
Nicolas Cage.
I don't get it myself. One day she calls me, says she can't live without you. Next day she's calling almost in tears. You know, maybe you two have some kind of sicko thing going on.
No, sir.
Guarding Tess.
I'm counting on you, and so's the country.
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. I think today, as always, will be a very interesting discussion.
As always, it will be a very interesting discussion, because we are very interesting people, and we have very interesting discussions.
Correct.
And today, that interesting discussion will be about the 1994 film Guarding Tess, a movie written and directed by Hugh Wilson, who was the creator of iconic 70s sitcom WKRP in Cincinnati and director of the original Police Academy.
Wow.
Yeah.
How about that?
That's something, right?
There's some pedigree there.
There is. Nicolas Cage plays Doug Chesnick, a Secret Service agent whose assignment is to guard the former First Lady of the United States, Tess Carlisle, played by Shirley MacLaine. The film is pretty deliberately lighthearted, at least for a little while.
For
most of its runtime. All signs point to this being like a pretty feel-good, ultimately kind of forgettable comedy that kind of coasts by on the presence of its actors, right? Like,
yeah.
I think we're on the same page there. Like, it was like, oh, like, what did you think of the first hour of this movie, Mike? Were you kind of like, you know, it's fine? Like,
yeah, there's some silly stuff. It's, for the most part, it's this old woman is kind of eccentric, and look at what she makes these guys go through.
Exactly.
For about an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah. Like, by the 1 hour mark in this movie, you have a pretty good idea of where this movie's going to go, except you don't. Because, man, Guarding Tess takes a really weird turn.
Yeah.
The
Spanish Inquisition shows up because nobody expected it.
Yep, yeah. With about 25 minutes to go in the movie, Tess is kidnapped, and the comedy stops dead to become this, like, missing persons thriller.
It was pretty weird. So the whole, you know, about the first hour of the film, like I said, it's the silly comedy and... it's not all that funny. There are some silly bits, you know?
Yeah, a couple of, like, amusing moments, but it's not, like, anything special, I didn't feel like, anyway. It was, like, you know.
There was nothing above a chuckle.
It felt like kind of like a movie made for, like, Lifetime and it would air during the middle of the day or something.
Yes, exactly. And Doug, Nicolas Cage's character, is all grumpy most of the time, and then they start to turn around. They enjoyed each other's company somewhat,
right.
And then she gets kidnapped or disappears, and... it's kind of that part of the film is, oh, Doug's going to realize how much he actually cares for her now that she's gone. But then it goes like way further than it
needs.
It gets really dark. And the last 10 minutes of this film are really a different movie, and it doesn't make any sense how we get there.
Absolutely. It's like somebody just grafted an entirely different movie like onto this one, like towards the end, like cut off the end of whatever this movie was.
You can say it shoots the toe off the original movie.
we'll get a new toe on. Yeah, we're going to get to that later. And then when all that's over, the movie just kind of jumps right back into whimsical comedy mode for the last 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And as if everything was fine. Like, everything is totally normal.
Yeah, no repercussions for what happened.
Yeah, it was kind of insane. This movie pretty much broke even at the box office and was considered a mild success. On a budget of $20 million, it made $27 million. So, you know, it didn't make a ton of money, but it, you know, didn't lose a ton of money either.
Yeah.
It got mixed reviews when it came out. Currently holds a 59% of Rotten Tomatoes. The film was nominated for a Golden Globe Award.
Really?
It was.
Best musical.
Close. Shirley MacLaine was nominated for Best Actress in a Comedy or Musical.
That's close.
And this was the best musical of the year, so... no, this is not a musical. The film stars Nicolas Cage as Doug Chester.
Thanks for clearing that up, Mike.
Well, you never know. You never know if The Martian can be nominated as a comedy or a musical. You know, we should really make the distinction, because comedies and musicals are interchangeable, so they should really be in the same category.
You're right.
The film stars Nicolas Cage as Doug Chesnick alongside Shirley MacLaine as the titular Tess, who is being guarded. It also features Austin Pendleton, Edward Albert, James Rebhorn, who was a character actor that I really loved. He died a couple years ago. He's in movies like Independence Day and Sleepwalk With Me. Always a really good presence. It was cool to see him. Richard Griffiths, who was Uncle Vernon in the Harry Potter films.
Yep, recognize him.
Yeah, which is kind of neat. John Roselius, David Graff, Harry J. Lennox from Dollhouse. Good show. and also Dale Dye, Firebirds reunion over there.
Yeah, that's right.
Did you catch that, Mike, when he came up on screen? It's like an older dude with the white mustache.
I didn't catch it, no. Yeah, that's all till right now.
He was in Firebirds. So Nicolas Cage and Dale Dye together at last.
Just the dream team.
Yeah, just what the people were asking for.
Yep.
Okay, and the IMDb plot synopsis of this movie reads, a former U.S. First Lady wants a particular Secret Service agent to head her bodyguard detail, even though he can't stand her. Hijinks ensue.
Does it actually say hijinks ensue?
It does not say hijinks ensue. Oh, man. But I felt that was appropriate.
That is the kind of thing I thought would be in the plot synopsis of this movie.
The film was directed by Hugh Wilson and written by Hugh Wilson and Peter Torukvai, later known as PJ Torukvai. Torukvai was a writer on WKRP in Cincinnati and also worked on films like Real Genius, Back to School, and Caddyshack 2.
How about that?
I like your little with Caddyshack 2. truly the high watermark of comedy.
It's
films.
A little cherry on top for this movie.
Hugh Wilson would next direct the massively successful comedy The First Wives Club, starring Goldie Hawn, Diane Keaton, and Bette Midler. His most recent film was the 2004 low-budget baseball drama Mickey, which starred Harry Connick Jr.
Forget that one.
Yeah, apparently everybody. That's a movie that's – I actually had to look that up. It made like $300,000 at the box office. Did not do well. It's a movie that nobody remembers, and I don't think anybody has seen, but
– Nope.
That is the case. So anyway, Mike, Guarding Tess, what are your overall thoughts on this film?
I feel like I kind of sort of gave him a little bit already. It's mostly – it was enjoyable or bearable at least for the runtime all the way through. But it was okay. It was kind of fun a little bit to just watch Nicolas Cage. There's and Shirley MacLaine kind of bounce off each other and the stuff that's going on. And then I was really confused for the last 20 minutes or so and felt kind of uncomfortable.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think for like most of its runtime, this movie really isn't aiming to be anything more than pleasant.
Yeah.
You know, I think that would be the word to use. Like, it's kind of just like, it exists. It's not going to challenge the audience in any way.
No.
It's not going to make you question your place in the universe unless you're really bored and start thinking about those questions. But, you know, for most of its runtime, like it's kind of just banking on the idea that you want to watch Nicolas Cage and Shirley MacLaine slowly get to know each other over the course of an hour and a half.
Yeah.
But after that first hour and 10 minutes or so, and it turns into like this weird kidnapping drama, I genuinely didn't know what to make of this movie.
Yeah. Yeah. It seems as if we have all different characters, different stakes. It's a different movie.
Like, entirely new characters who had not been in the movie suddenly become major parts of the movie because they have to investigate this whole kidnapping thing.
Yeah. And even Nicolas Cage's character, Doug, becomes a different person for a while there.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's pretty crazy.
He becomes more of a Nicolas Cage character.
Very true. That's a good way to put it.
It comes out of nowhere, like completely like out of left field. Like, there's a running thing in the movie earlier on where Tess will get into the car and have her driver just drive her away without her Secret Service detail, right?
Yeah.
So there's a running thing where she disappears and they have to get her.
Mm.
And then, you know, by that time at the end of the movie, it seems like, oh, okay, that's what's happening. Like, she's running off again. But it wouldn't make sense for her to do that because now she likes Nicolas Cage.
Yes.
Right? So they're like friends now. And then they do that. And then Cage is considered a suspect in the disappearance of her because of this whole thing. And then turns out it wasn't him, obviously. But it turns out to be the only person it could be, the driver.
Right.
And the way they get that information is terrifying.
Yeah, straight up illegal.
Yeah, absolutely. But there's no repercussions for any of these illegalities or anything like that. Basically, the driver ends up in the hospital. I don't remember how he got it. You just watched this movie, right? Minutes ago. Okay, I watched this movie a few days ago because we were going to record this podcast a few days ago and we didn't. Yeah. So,
and it definitely didn't have anything to do with the fact that I just watched this movie minutes ago. That's definitely not the reason. I swear.
But because of that, your memory is probably better than mine. So why was he in the hospital again?
He had been dosed with some heavy anesthetic in the. He presumably injected it in himself. They find the syringe in the back of the car. And it's got, like, ketamine and something else in it, they say.
Oh, okay.
He was knocked unconscious.
It was part of his plan to be caught so that they wouldn't suspect him.
Correct.
Even though he was the one who did it.
He was the one, yeah.
Right. But Cage realizes it's him right away and starts to interrogate him in the hospital room. Yeah. Like, very violently interrogating him. I'm pretty sure you're not really supposed to interrogate people in the hospital room in the first place.
Well, especially because he says, I want a lawyer. And he's like, I'll have to talk to my lawyer. And then Douglas just pulls his gun on him.
Yeah!
He's like, tell me! Just all in his face.
Not only that, Douglas pulls his gun on him. James Redhorn's there, freaks out, and says, you can't do that.
Yeah, he says, you can't do that.
Aren't we in enough trouble already? Something like that. Like, he says, we're already in enough trouble. And like, as if to say, like, he doesn't mind that he pulled a gun on him. He just doesn't want to deal with the paperwork.
Pretty much. Everyone knows that's how every cop is.
Yeah. But then not only that, Nicolas Cage starts to threaten him, to threaten to shoot off his toes.
Yep.
And then he actually shoots him.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yep. It's insane. It was insane. And they make the joke, the driver makes the joke. He just starts yelling. He didn't even count because Nicolas Cage is like, I'm going to count to five and then shoot your toe off. And then just shoots the toe.
Yes.
So, like, they use this dude, Cage, torturing this dude, like, for the yucks, and it's pretty uncomfortable.
Weird. That was Bad Lieutenant Cage over there. That was like the Cage we saw in Bad Lieutenant, Port of Call, New Orleans.
Yeah.
Like, this is not the Cage in the movie that we were watching.
No. Yeah, he shoots his toe off, he starts cursing, which hasn't happened in the movie for the most part.
Right. And, you know, the thing about the cursing, we're going to get into the Netflix reviews in a little bit, like when we get towards the end of this episode. And I was picking out Netflix reviews, and a lot of them were people complaining about the cursing in this movie.
Really?
Yeah. And I feel like part of that is that the demographic of this movie, I would feel like, is like skews older and simpler. But the people who don't want to watch Nicolas Cage shooting a dude in the toes.
Right. Presumably. Yeah, that makes sense.
But the thing is, I was reading them and I was having trouble remembering the cursing in this movie, partially because I watched this a few days ago, and partially I think because I'm just like a jaded cynic who expects cursing in all my movies.
I mean, I like we said, I just finished watching this movie and I can only remember the one curse, so I don't know.
He definitely says the F word there, which is probably the
like
the movie's like one F word for the PG-13 rating. Right. He says goddamn at least a couple times, I think.
A couple times, yeah, that's true.
But otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. It's a pretty crazy out of character moment for this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's like it just completely boggles the mind that was in there.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And he even said the other what was the actor's name? You just said it and
James,
I lost it.
James Redhorn.
Yes. He even says, even if he tells us anything, we can't use it because you're torturing this guy. I mean, he doesn't say because you're torturing, but
yeah,
that's what's going on. And then they just do. They just use.
They just use the information because he gets the information out of him.
Yeah, like, he fesses up what happened.
Yeah, and then James Cameron was like, "Oh, well, okay,
all right.
You're a loose cannon, but you get results, Cage."
Yeah, that's exactly what it is.
So, very good. So the movie goes on, and they go in and rescue Tess, who has been buried alive.
Yeah,
underneath the driver's farm. And it becomes like this whole thing where the secret agents have to like dig her out and they bring her to the helicopter and they save her and it's nice.
Yeah.
But it's like, it's such a dark turn for this movie to take.
They dig down into they find the box that she's in or whatever she's in. I don't know. And there is an air hole with a pipe, you know, attached to it and they pull the pipe off and Nicolas Cage like sticks his face in. And then we see we cut to a shot from inside whatever container she's in, and she looks like really pale and dead. And
yeah.
It's like I mean, you could I guess tell where the movie's going that she would be alive, but that shot is like really dark and intense, and it that matches the 10 minutes I've been watching, but the other hour and 10 minutes I have no idea what's going on.
It does not, it does not match with the rest of the movie at all. And also, I mean that so. She gets saved. She goes to the hospital and is saved and everything.
Yeah.
She still has a brain tumor at the end of the movie, right?
I don't know if you heard this, Mike, but being buried alive cures brain cancer.
Well, it's played off as like this really happy ending that they saved her.
Yeah.
But like part of the movie is that she has this inoperable brain tumor.
Mm-hmm.
And she still has it at the end of the movie. So like she's gonna die soon.
Yeah. That's a really good point. I forgot about that. And they make a point to bring it up in this at the very, like, you know, 10 minutes before this again.
Right.
Where the guy's like, the FBI director or whatever is talking. He's like, oh, by the way, did you guys know she had an inoperable brain tumor? Well, she does. And they just like move on.
Yeah. I mean, I do like the way they foreshadow the brain tumor at the beginning of the movie. It's Cage arguing with Tess and she says like a things like there are three things. I have an inoperable brain tumor, we're going to the opera, and some other thing. And she's like, which one of those do you think is true? And they end up going to the opera. And that's like that's kind of the joke. But when she said the first thing she said was I have an inoperable brain tumor, like I was like, oh well, she probably actually does.
I don't know, like the third thing was they have a Scud missile launcher. I thought that was the one.
Right, that was the third thing.
Again, minutes ago.
Minutes ago. So, I mean, Mike, is there any other scenes in this movie? Let's talk about some of the comedy bits. You know, now that we've talked about how weird the movie gets, like, let's talk about why it gets that weird. Like, you know, are there scenes in this movie that stood out to you as comedy scenes, like stuff that you thought was funny, stuff that you thought fell flat for you? What scenes stood out, do you think?
I thought these scenes whenever Douglas or Nicolas Cage's character would be on the phone with the president were at least chuckle worthy because he gets Nicolas Cage is so flustered the whole he's just like turns into like this bumbling idiot and the president is clearly just has no concern or doesn't really care about whatever's going on.
Right. And also the president is voiced by the director of this movie, Hugh Wilson, as a voice character.
Oh, really?
Yes.
That's interesting. So the other thing that stood out enough for me to make a note of it, so Tess and the driver take off for the first time, and we see that it's like, that's when they establish that this is a thing that happens to them. And Cage, after they find her and she comes home, Cage goes into the room where Tess is and yells at her about how the driver actually works for the Secret Service and they're going to fire him and all this stuff. And I don't remember the exact line, but the line ends with, "And he's gone!" And Cage yells it. And then McClane says, as Tess says something back, and then yells, "And he's staying."
Right. I actually noted that too, because it was like McClane making fun of Cage.
Yes, that's exactly what my note was. It said McClane taking Cage head on in yelling the last three words of the line game.
Yeah, Yeah, that was good. I also did enjoy the grocery shopping scene. I thought that was pretty delightful.
That was pretty funny.
Where like now that they're all friends now, and the Secret Service is like this well-oiled machine that is just going through the grocery, helping her grocery shop. Yeah, it was pretty funny.
They're using the earpiece wrist walkie-talkie thing to ask for price on peas.
Yeah. Yeah, that kind of stuff. That's pretty funny. But I mean, most of this movie is kind of just like a quiet lull, I feel like. You know, it's the kind of thing that like a grandparent would enjoy. You know.
That is the perfect way to put this movie. So right.
At least the first hour and 10 minutes would be the kind of thing a grandparent would enjoy, and then the last 15 minutes is probably the last 15 minutes is probably like a section of a movie that I might really like if it was attached to, you know, a movie that it fit in.
Yeah, normally Harrison Ford is playing that character, and it was written by Tom Clancy.
Exactly, yeah. So I don't know. I think Guarding Tess overall, like, it's like fine.
Yeah.
I would come down more on the negative side than positive. I feel like, you know, most of it just kind of feels like this quiet lull that doesn't really do much for me. It's totally pleasant. There's not much going on in it for like an hour and 10 minutes, kind of just like Cage and Shirley MacLaine.
Yeah.
And they're good together. I like them.
Yeah, they are a good pair.
But, you know, it's whatever, it's fine. And then that last 15 minutes kind of just pushes it into like, whoa, what the fuck am I watching?
Yeah, I think if the movie had not done that, had that last turn, I would have come down on the positive side of being in the middle, but because it has that weird segment, I skew to the negative.
Right. Yeah, fair enough. All right, what do you think? I mean, talking about Cage a little bit, what do you think of his performance in this movie as Doug Chesnick?
Surprisingly restrained for Nicolas Cage.
Up until that scene in the hospital,
up until he tortures that dude. He's kind of not doing his Cage thing other than yelling the end of a line that one time. And he's fine. He's you know, it's good. He's kind of funny how exasperated he is throughout some of the scenes and stuff, but other than that, it's a pretty standard performance. He has a normal speaking voice.
That's true. One day I'm going to go through all the movies that we've watched, just count up the amount of weird voices that Cage has used.
I'm pretty sure it's most of them.
It's gotta be. So this is one of his normal ones, which is, you know, kind of a nice change of pace.
Yeah.
I thought he was pretty solid in this movie. You know, it's, I don't think it required that much of him except to just kind of be charming.
Yeah.
Or be exasperated with Shirley MacLaine. And, you know, they're, as a comic duo, it's not like they're, it's weird because I feel like both of them are kind of straight men.
Right.
In this pairing, there's not like one that's like comedic towards the other, like one, like not one that's reacting to the other. They're both kind of serious throughout most of the movie. Neither one's like cracking jokes.
Right.
But I guess it's just like a situational thing. Like the comedy comes from the situations that they get themselves in, like they're oddballs, like they don't match together. And, I don't know. I don't think it works as well as it could, but, you know, Cage is solid in the movie, and, Shirley MacLaine is also very good as Tess. Golden Globe worthy, even. But,
there is one more, thing I forgot that I wanted to bring up. Well, we've been harping on this, how weird and, that very end 10-15 minutes are, and how there's no repercussions and all of that stuff. So after they dig her out of the hole and she's on the helicopter and they're flying away, they start making jokes about how Cage hasn't killed anyone yet. And I just wanted to also highlight that, because that is really weird.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, oh, or the FBI guy says like, oh, he had to shoot someone. And Tess is like, did you kill him? And he's like, no, I shot his toe. And she's like, oh, after all that practice. And it's like, what? You can't like, make a joke about how you didn't kill a guy.
Yeah. Plus, you just came out of the ground. Like you're in no position to be cracking jokes at this point, I feel like.
So, yeah, it doesn't really make sense that she would be, like, Spitfire again. It's odd.
Yeah, it was weird. All right. Is there anything else about Guarding Tess you wanted to talk about, Mike? Anything pressing or any possible observations?
No, I don't believe so.
Okay.
That's about it.
Yeah. So I think overall we were both kind of like, you know, it's fine. It's whatever. It's got, yeah. It's if you're into interesting oddities, You can watch this and just marvel at the last 15 minutes and how bizarre they are.
Yeah.
And it's not even like taken on their own, like they're not that bizarre if you're watching like this kidnapping thriller, but yeah. Taken after an hour and 15 minutes of this whimsical comedy, even like the music in this movie is like, you know, this whimsical comedy music, like there's like flutes going on. Like,
yeah. All the music in this is kind of based in opera and it's kind of silly. It like you said, it makes the comedy stuff, because they're this epic swelling classical music behind them, like just picking out clothes and like not doing anything that is worthy of that kind of music.
Yeah.
But that's kind of it. That's all that's, but yeah, it's part of the whole whimsy thing that you were saying.
Exactly. Yeah. It's whimsy, and then horrifying.
Yeah.
It's basically what we both took away from this movie. All right. So we don't have that much else to say about Guarding Tess. It's a pretty lightweight film. Let's get into some Netflix reviews, Mike.
All right.
So this is our Netflix reviews. We started doing this a few episodes ago, and they're usually a good deal of fun, and I got a few good ones here. This is a one-star review from Netflix for Guarding Tess. I made it through 20 minutes. So stupid. Basically, an old woman making it pitiful for a Secret Service agent. Do you like watching someone play golf? Do you like watching someone lay in bed? Do you like watching your teen watch the neighbor's kid? If not, don't get this movie. Even filing my nails has more action.
Wow. That's rough.
I feel bad for these people because they made it through 20 minutes and all the action happens in the last 25.
Yeah, they didn't get to the crazy part.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's a pretty good description of what goes on for most of this movie, though.
Yeah. Here's a 2-star review. Good casting, good acting, adequate direction, dismal screenplay. That was all caps. Shirley MacLaine's character is a fine example of why Eskimos stick their elderly on an ice floe.
Wow. Holy crap.
I know.
I bet that person wrote the last 20 minutes of this movie.
There's more. All through the movie, all she does is gripe, 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 and Nick Cage's character puts up with it over and over. It loses its novelty rather quickly. I guess this appeals to some audiences, i.e. Hallmark Channel viewers, but that's not my demographic. If you have a Y chromosome and or aren't drawing Social Security, you should probably pass this one by.
That guy's got a hot take.
Yeah. Ouch. here's another 1-star review. I was quite enjoying this movie. It was never going to win any awards, but still not bad. However, the blasphemous language is horrendous.
Wow.
And here's the best part. I got 25 minutes in and had to switch it off.
These people.
Yeah. If this doesn't bother you, as I know it doesn't for the huge majority of people, then it's a mediocre movie. If, however, it does offend you, like me, then the amount of abhorrent, blasphemous language in a mild film like this is completely unacceptable. Completely is in all caps.
Jesus.
Yeah. So that's even before he gets the F-bomb later on.
Yeah. Well, it's just because she kept saying, or that's an assumption, they kept saying blasphemous. I'm assuming they're mad how many times they say goddamn.
Right. I feel like they don't even say it that much, though.
I don't. Maybe, like, you're right. I think we're just jaded assholes, and I don't even notice,
you know,
anymore.
We live in the Sodom and Gomorrah of sin in our everyday lives.
So. Oh, the cesspool of New York.
Yeah. So, you know, I guess that stuff goes right over our heads, but for these these people. Here's a 5-star review of Guarding Tess, and this is in all caps. The entire review is in all caps.
Is it written by Film Crit Hulk?
I wish. I really hope this will be a good movie pick tonight, and I was right. And I could watch this movie over. That's how much I loved it. It will be one that stays with me for a little bit like a good book.
Wow. I'm really glad at least someone had found enjoyment in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a 2-star review of Guarding Tess. I'm sorry to be a stick in the mud, but I did not enjoy this movie. I had to turn it off after 45 minutes. That's all I could take. Wow. I didn't see anything funny in that time, and I was tired of hearing goddamn. I usually love Nicolas Cage, but this was offensive.
Wow, there's so many sensitive people out there.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who are really offended by this incredibly mild, toothless movie.
Imagine if they had made it an hour to the fuck.
Yeah.
To the says fuck.
Imagine if they made it to the scene where Nick Cage shoots a man in the toe.
Yeah.
In a hospital bed.
Ugh.
And finally, here's a 1-star review of Guarding Tess. And this is a very odd 1-star review. A smart, very soft, and hard comedy about the dynamics of mental and physical power in our society. Basically, this movie will never get old, and I loved it.
But it's a one star.
It's a one star review.
Oh, that's great. That person misclicked.
They did. All right, so that's those are our guarding tests. Netflix reviews, just a couple funny ones I found. Otherwise, any final thoughts, Mike, about guarding tests?
Not really. I think we've summed it up pretty well.
Okay, good.
it's okay for the most part. It takes a weird turn at the end. I don't know.
Yeah, no, I'm
there's not really a whole lot to say because it's kind of a lukewarm movie anyway.
Yeah, it's a very like inoffensive, bland kind of movie that just.
Unless goddamn really offends you, then.
Which apparently there are quite a few people who that offends. All right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you enjoy Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I stream our games at twitch.tv/geonerd79.
And you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, letterboxd at mikesmithfilm, and on Instagram at meatsandwichwpdh. You can find all our podcasts at filmbook.com. Thank you guys so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriccio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review.
Like, if you have an inoperable brain tumor, you could tell us.
Nah, I've been buried alive for a couple days. That's what that is.
Then you're fine.
I'm coughing up dirt. That's what that is. Subscribe to the podcast, rate it. Take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email because we produce so many different ones to help you keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks where we'll be discussing Nicolas Cage in 1994's neo-noir film Red Rock West. And you can check out this week's Filmbookcast where we'll be talking about the Doom spinoff.
That was my joke.
we've both been saying that joke for months.
We have. We have. You're right.
We're finally going to be talking about the Doom spinoff, The Big Fucking Gun.
Starring the Big Friendly Giant.
Starring The Rock. And Carl Urban.
Wow. Yes, please.
They were both in that movie.
That's crazy. That movie deserves to be revisited.
I don't think it does.
You're probably right.
I remember watching Doom a long time ago. And being incredibly bored for about 98% of its runtime, but then there's that two minute scene where they do the entire thing in first person when they get the BFG.
Yeah,
and it's the best. It's so cool because it's basically just watching the video game.
Yep,
and it's pretty neat. The rest of the movie is garbage, though.
Stay tuned for more in our review of The Big Fucking Gun.
Stay tuned. We're gonna do an After Dark review of the 2005 film Doom.
Yeah, we should totally do that. That would be hilarious.
Based on that, we won't watch it. We'll base this entirely on our memories of that movie from watching it 10 years ago.
Oh my god.
It'll be a fun time. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening. We are out.